everyone. I'm Joshua Thompson.
And I'm Angela Brown.
And we're here with our third and final bonus episode before the launch of our second full season later in 2021. Make sure you catch the first two bonus episodes just in case you haven't. We've been talking about 2020, which has been one of the most historic and tumultuous times in modern American history. On the last episode, we focused on the pandemic. So for this episode, we'd like to talk about a few things that are very important. I'd say now more than ever, innovation and resilience. So for that, we'd like to turn to our amazing and prolific special guest for these episodes, Dr. Bill Banfield. Angela, I understand you've got a few pieces picked out from Dr. Banfield's repertoire, which reflect not only innovative approaches, but the idea of taking tragedy or hardship and using it to fuel art. So, Angela, tell us what a few pieces you got in mind.
Yes, there are a couple of pieces that I really enjoyed listening to that I wanted to ask you some questions about.
Sure.
And one is the Harlem Symphony. Yeah. And I believe the piece is called The Cape is Charming.
Yeah.
And can you tell us, is that actually a song cycle or part of a song cycle, or is it actually from a symphony?
No, that is actually Symphony 12, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
And it is taken from a letter that Langston Hughes wrote to his buddy. They were going to Cuba. You know, I've been to Cuba over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, 6 times, actually.
Wow.
And so I thought it was really incredible. Langston Hughes went to Cuba, and he wrote to Carl Van Vechten, one of his supporters in New York who was living in Harlem. And one of the lines from it was, "I hope Harlem is still there." So I called the symphony, "I Hope Harlem is Still There." I call it for short, my Harlem Symphony. But that movement, The Cape is Charming, is from what I did, Angela and Josh. I just transcribed every word of Langston Hughes' letter.
Wow.
It was unedited. And one of the lines is, you know, he's talking about how charming the Cape looked at the particular part of as the ships came in to the bay that he was staying in, how charming the rooms were. And he said how charming the whole thing was. And he talked about this in his letter. And that particular movement, it's charming, is from all those words in that aria or that song, is actually the words of Langston Hughes. So, I mean, it's interesting to talk about that. Langston Hughes was a griot. He was a poet, using his words and insights to illuminate the way for the people and to do social critique and social kind of dealing with inequities in our lives. So here's a great poet who we depend upon. And so that's where the lines from this symphony come from, actually from a Langston Hughes letter.
Wow, that's deep, Doc. Well, let's listen to it a little bit.
Yes.
Okay.
The Cape is charming, full of old ruins from the old days of the French, perished into the sea by the hills. It's much cooler rooms and meals for only $25 a month. All the native crew from the ship we took at Santiago live in at the Cape. We have plenty of food.
You like that one?
That was so charming.
So charming. So charming.
So charming.
If you can imagine, this is 1932. So okay. He's a young, okay. This is a young 30-year-old, right? Uh-huh. I mean, come on. He's traveling with his buddy. They want to go to Cuba, and he's writing to his business partner in New York talking about it's so charming. You know, our rooms look over the bay. We only spend $25 a month. Yeah, right. Yeah, we go to parties. We have plenty of friends. Mm-hmm. Our friends take us to cockfights, you know, fish boats, dances on the weekend. So he's just hanging out. You know what I'm saying? It's just talking about what he's dealing with. So that's what that's about. He says, and it's so charming.
I love it. Now, tell me, how do you select who you're going to work with? Like the voices. Who was that young soprano?
That young soprano sang, and that was the Philip Brunel Vocal Essence Ensemble, which is one of the greatest vocal groups in the country. And they have their own orchestra, and they commissioned this work for me. And I was so moved by the Langston Hughes poem that I actually wrote the publisher. So listen, I really want to set this, and they gave me permission to set it. Generally what happens is if you know, when you're a composer, you may write your own libretto or poems or whatever, but sometimes you run across pieces like that. In the case of someone like Langston Hughes, his words are very very expensive to use, so you have to get permission from the estate. Yeah. So this was a very delicate negotiation, but no one had set a letter of Langston Hughes before. This wasn't one of his poems. I mean, if you can imagine, that's not a poem. That's the way this brother speaks when he writes a letter. When you're reading it, it's so dynamic, like a story or a poem. So I said, my goodness, I didn't have to change one word of it.
Mm. I love how you've done that, because again, it's being innovative to use what's already there with respect, right?
Yeah,
the artist.
Yeah, right.
Which kind of tying into this summer, again, I would have to say retrospectively, probably not since 1968 have we seen a summer as racially charged.
Yeah.
And we can all espouse and remember Langston Hughes's What Happens to a Dream Deferred.
Sure, absolutely.
Here becomes these other 21st century reiterations of the same things. And you do that with music to be able to talk about, again, we've talked about it too, humanity. humanity and melanated moments in classical music, humanity in the melanin of the bodies that we exist in. And we just felt, Angela and I just kind of felt like, well, you know, this would be a great platform in which to not convince and or make a case, but to repackage and reframe and hold the mirror up to our listening audience to really, I don't know, compel us through music to take stock of what's happened over 2020 in this regard and really think about it, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing that I really enjoyed, and this is kind of like our nice setup for this next little segue.
Okay. Set it up, baby.
Is we've discussed issues with the pandemic. We have briefly touched on issues with racial equity or inequity. But like Angela said at the beginning of these episodes, there's some really positive things that we need to highlight. And so guess what? We go highlight them in the midst of all of this. In the world of melanated peoples and in melanated music, there's been some incredible new music that has been created out of this. And Dr. Bill, you alluded to it already. You were the president of the selection committee for the Pulitzer Prize in Music. Can you tell us, because this is resiliency, this is creativity, perseverance born out of this. Give us an understanding of what won, because you were the president of this. What won this year's 2020 Pulitzer Prize in Music?
Well, I was the chair. The Pulitzer has many categories: novels, literature. There are all kinds of things, and music is one. Every year, the Pulitzer Board awards a top chosen work to be the piece to be awarded the Pulitzer Prize in music. I was the chair of the music committee this year. And so, interestingly enough, this year was the largest amount in 2020 of submissions in the whole history of the Pulitzer Prize. So that should tell you right there that people, despite the fact that we're in the middle of COVID or the beginning and people were moving in these last year or so, more people are engaged in quality music, all kinds of music, from poetry to dance to art music to rock and roll to hip hop. People, artists are creating, like you all said, responses to the world and the life that we live contemporarily. And the Pulitzer Prize gives one of the finest examples of that. And this year, we chose Anthony Davis's Central Park Five, which deals with inequity. It really does. That's what its central theme is. We didn't choose it for that reason, because we're living in difficult times. It's just that the best piece that came through all of that, I mean, hundreds of pieces, the top winning prize happened to be an opera by Anthony Davis that dealt with this critical issue. So it happened to be a great piece of music, but it also embodied innovation in the best ways. It addressed the kind of world that we live in. And for those reasons, the Pulitzer Prize board chose this. I'll read to you one of the reasons that we chose it. This work rises as a great example of truly contemporary American music. It as well is transformative. As art, it contributes not only to our need for optimism in the face of our turbulent times, but puts forward boldly the American ideal of hope and justice. It raises the bar on the future of American opera and our culture, and it contributes to the line culturally of great music through the lens of the American artistic experience. The craft in this opera is spot on. The way it addresses the balance with orchestration, the excitement, the variety, and the beauty, and the powerful vocal writing, and tells a story that is important and moving, and this is charged emotionally. It goes on and on in what we said. I don't want to read the whole thing, but I think some of the things you all are talking about, the American landscape, the way in which art addresses the world that we live in, this piece rose to the occasion.
Absolutely.
Wow.
You know, and we've seen other iterations of it. I haven't seen it yet on Netflix because I can't bring myself to, but the film When They See Us. And so here's a wonderful way. And Angela, you'll know too. I know you are always dying to have people bring opera ever more forward into the 21st century.
Yes, definitely. Because it's necessary. It's necessary.
And so here comes this medium in which it does that. It addresses the times in which we're living in, racial inequalities, but more importantly, the search for peace, for justice. And opera is the medium from a melanated person in which it's done. To me, that's just remarkable. I think Angela, I don't know about you, but 2020 done been a year for everybody. And if that's what takes the cake, then let's listen, eat that slice of cake because we need
let's
it.
Let's do it.
Phenomenal. Dr. Bill, we just really want to say thank you so much for helping us unpack 2020 as we prepare for other things, because you, sir, are the tip of the iceberg. You are the window into the horizon of what season two is going to be. You really are, man. We were so excited when we were able to actually get you for this.
Oh, my goodness. Dr. B, you are a total combo platter, baby. I mean, you give us classical, you give us ballet, you give us symphonic works, art songs, you give us compositions, and we want to thank you for just giving us a little bit of your time today. So I'm going to say I'm Angela Brown.
And I'm Joshua Thompson.
And this has been Melanated Moments in Classical Music.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joshua Thompson.
And I'm Angela Brown.
And this is Melanated Moments in Classical Music.
Thank you, Edition.
As host of Melanated Moments in Classical Music, we wanted to take a moment to thank the Central Indiana Community Foundation,
the Board of Directors of Indianapolis Foundation, and
the Evans Woolen Fund for Fine Arts for supporting Season 2 of our podcast.
We can't wait to bring you Season 2 as part of Classical Music Indy's Amplify Our Voices initiative.
And as always, we look forward to shining a bright spotlight on musical works composed by, for, and about Black people. We truly and sincerely thank you for your generous support.